Mobius's Code by Francis Rosenfeld. Jennifer 2.0.4. Jennifer had many shortcomings, but she had some redeeming qualities too, and one of them was reliability. Since she'd promised Mobius she would, she went home to figure out how to mesh her current existence with life as it used to be. Her mother was waiting in the kitchen, working feverishly on her favorite childhood dish, and the familiar aroma instantly put Jennifer in a good mood. "What's the occasion, Mom?" Jennifer asked, pleased but bewildered by all the pampering. "Can't a mother do something for her daughter just because she loves her?" Her mother smiled while she plated the dish and set it on the table. She gestured to Jennifer to sit down, and the latter obeyed. "Come on, Mom, out with it. What is going on?" Jennifer tried out her newfound assertiveness. "Well, I didn't want to upset you, dear, but I thought it would be best if you found out from me before the rumor mill starts making a meal of it." Her mother hesitated for a second, and then went into the subject in full force. "Your boyfriend got engaged, sweetie. I'm so sorry." "That's weird," Jennifer thought. "Well, at least that explains why he kept canceling our dates," she asked aloud, in a voice that sounded too indifferent, considering, and which she tried to adjust as she went, so as not to draw suspicion. "Engaged? To whom?" Her mother hesitated again, also trying to find the right tone for this particular subject. She'd never liked her daughter's boyfriend, whom she found callous and dismissive, and she was kind of relieved that he was finally out of Jennifer's life, but didn't want her daughter to think she didn't empathize with her loss. "Marie, dear." "Marie? As in his cousin Marie?" Jennifer couldn't believe her ears. "One and the same," her mother nodded to confirm. "You can't be serious," Jennifer continued, perplexed. "Believe it." Jennifer put her head down, staring at her plate of food, which suddenly had lost all of its appeal. She couldn't believe the cheating loser and his deceitful snake of a cousin, who had always pretended to be her friend, and resented her mother for introducing her to this man, and Mobius for writing yet another painful and demeaning life event into her code. "Why did all of these people, who supposedly loved and cared for me, found themselves so entitled to step all over my life and trash it like that?" For a moment, just a brief moment, she wanted to do something outrageous, something that would defy every rule in the book, like changing the atmosphere to laughing gas, or painting the sky pink, but she remembered the amount of hell she would catch if any of those thoughts manifested, so she went back to her happy place, which, surprisingly enough, looked very much like unconstructed space. She decided to give Mobius a pass. "Please say something, dear, I can't bear to see you unhappy like that," her mother pleaded. "But I'm not unhappy, Mom," Jennifer let out before she had time to catch herself. "I'm glad to hear that, sweetheart, although I don't understand it. Sometimes it feels like you don't care about anything at all." Here it comes, Jennifer mentally prepared for the inevitable sequel. "I just worry about you, you know, almost 30 years old and you seem determined to throw your life away. I don't know what you are doing to your relationships to have them all end up like that. You can't possibly be serious. The man is marrying his cousin. How could this in any way be my fault?" Jennifer retorted, really irritated. "Thank you, Mobius. Thank you for forcing this conversation on me again, you insensitive jerk. Maybe if you cared more, Jennifer, these things wouldn't keep happening to you. You are so distant, sometimes I think you are not capable of loving anybody." "That's it. I've had it. I'm disappearing into unconstructed space right now, consequences be damned." Jennifer was trembling with rage, a feeling that she was very familiar with, since she'd experienced instances like this her entire life. She retreated in silence, like she always have, like she always did. Her mother suddenly recalled that her daughter was the aggrieved party in this situation and returned to a more compassionate tone. "Well, I say that's for the best, don't dwell on these things, Jennifer, it wasn't meant to be. Oh, I forgot. Look what I found for you, isn't this great?" She enthusiastically grabbed Jennifer and dragged her to the corner of the living room to show her a weird contraption. It was a fruit platter, rather large, spinning in thin air, about a foot up from its platform. It was full and looked quite heavy, which made the entire scene even more eerie. "The things they come up with, right?" her mother continued her cheerful chatter. "It's a levitation device," she felt compelled to explain to her daughter the object in front of their eyes, since the latter had never been very strong in science. Jennifer took the opportunity to divert the accursed conversation to more palatable subject matter. "That's interesting. How does it work?" she asked, genuinely curious and very relieved that the levitation design had chosen to manifest itself via objects and not people. Oh, I have no idea, what will they think of next, right? Her mother jumped onto a new subject eagerly, grateful to lighten up the atmosphere. So, tell me more about your life, sweetie, she said, trying to chase away all the unpleasantness of the awkward news she had to convey. How have you been? Last we talked, you seemed to be very excited about that new consulting job of yours.
Zanzibar, was it?
She said, not knowing how to approach the subject. That sounds exotic. Of all the things, Jennifer instantly considered rescinding Mobius's pass from earlier and wished she could summon him there on the spot, straight out of thin air, just to enjoy the reaction that would cause. Naturally, he did not show up. How bored must you be to come up with this kind of nonsense? I'm a human being, not a chew toy. Now I have to explain Zanzibar to my mother. Why Zanzibar? The moon wasn't available. She scrambled in search of a plausible story, but her mother seemed to have already gotten bored with this subject. What are you doing Friday night? She asked Jennifer in a tone she attempted to make as casual as possible.
I don't know yet. Why?
Jennifer replied. I was just thinking, since you have no plans now, maybe we could have dinner together, you know, catch up on things? Her mother smiled encouragingly.
Mom, that wouldn't happen to have something to do with me meeting new people, would it?
What's wrong with meeting new people, Jennifer? You have to put yourself out there. Honey, you're not 20 anymore. Listen from somebody who's been there, life passes you by, just like that. Her mother snapped her fingers to illustrate the concept. Jennifer had the sudden realization that this, all of this, whatever she wanted to call it, her life, her script, her design, was not feasible. It just didn't seem possible, in any way that she could think of, to marry these two lives she now led in a harmonious way. What was in store for her here, now that she had become the member of a very small race, that of the living dead? Why would she even attempt a relationship when she couldn't explain to herself what was happening? Would it be unconscionable to impose this hardship on a normal person's life? And to what end? Would she even be able to have those children that her mother so coveted, now that she wasn't technically alive? She got tired and discouraged all at once, and wanted to find a place, any place, where it was safe for her to just be, without having to explain anything to anyone. Unconstructed space immediately came up, and she didn't know whether to be relieved that a place like that actually existed, or in despair because being there pulled her even farther down the rabbit hole. She spent the rest of the evening making pleasant conversation with her mother, and going through a whole host of anecdotes, all of which depicted how busy, challenging and exciting her professional life was now, in the hope that the latter would abandon her project and stop trying to fix her up again. Jennifer went back upstairs sporting a frown and nursing a headache, both augmented by the fact that upon returning home from a trip to the corner store she had to go around the block twice before her apartment building deigned to reappear. In one fell swoop she had managed to get dumped, feel guilty and inadequate, and get cross with her loved ones for absolutely no reason at all. Surely it wasn't her mother's fault that her boyfriend didn't even bother to text her before getting engaged to somebody else. She went straight to her pottery shop and immersed herself in her latest project, not because she was particularly passionate about pottery, but because it seemed to be the only activity which had not been formally prohibited. I can only surmise the world will be awash in ceramics pretty soon. Jennifer finished her jug, decorated it, glazed it and put it in the kiln. After that, she grabbed a fresh lump of clay to start a new one. Don't worry about that, I'll place them in different historical periods. People can't seem to get enough of this stuff, Mobius commented. He pointed to one of the unglazed jugs on the top shelf, which was baked to a very deep red and had thin scored markings around the neck. That one, for instance, should fit nicely into the Etruscan era. Can I have it?
Ah, sure, Jennifer replied, surprised.
She had assumed that messing with the timeline would belong to the endless litany of proscribed activities, but apparently there was no overlap between angelic and human logic. Wouldn't it be easier to hand me a list of what is forbidden instead of throwing a fit every time I try something you don't approve of? Jennifer asked, as tactful as she could, since the intention was not to offend. I wish it were that easy, Mobius frowned. He wasn't sure his expectations were fair, and blamed himself for placing a human in the position where they had to exhibit the conduct and reasoning ability of a host. It is not only what you do, it's everything connected to that activity, your thoughts, your emotions, your intentions, your intensity,
your insecurities, even your unconscious reactions. He pointed to everything around them, all the artifacts that Jennifer's hopeful mind had eagerly created. Where do you think all of this stuff came from? I thought you just create things out of nothing up here, Jennifer replied. There is no such thing as nothing. If you can conceive of it, it's something. There is matter and energy and consciousness everywhere, to some degree. Whatever you make, this mug, for instance, is not matter, it is matter mixed with all of the energy and thought process you put into it. That's what makes it different from the jug next to it, or from the raw lump of clay you're holding in your hands right now. It's all the same clay, right? The same matter. What differentiates the results is your thought process. I'm not sure what you're trying to say, Jennifer got defensive. What I'm trying to say is that your mind has no focus and your emotions are a trash heap rolling down the hill on fire. Even the pottery terrifies me. I wonder if one can actually cause damage with pottery, Mobius thought, and then continued out loud. What I'm trying to say, Jennifer, is that if you want to be able to do the things I do, you have to be like me, in as much as it is possible. But I can't be like you, Jennifer started sniffling again. And herein lies our problem, Mobius concluded. Jennifer went back to her pottery shed, where she continued working and crying for hours, while Mobius went downstairs to set up a catchment basin for all the resulting rain. This is a full-time job for a whole team. There is no way one lone angel can manage all the consequences, he thought, dejected. I'm exhausted already, and it's not even noon. That should teach you to appreciate all the hard work our guardian angels are doing on a daily basis, Mobius, a voice from above resonated in his head, a voice he recognized as Aphael's. Mobius crushed an impious thought before it managed to emerge, and then went straight into no-thought mode, just to be on the safe side for the remainder of the work. After a couple of hours, Jennifer got tired of crying and decided to go back home. What was the point of crying anyway, if nobody was there to care about it? She'd never thought of crying as a result-oriented activity before and had to admit that if it engendered an outcome, it probably wouldn't be a positive one. Suddenly, the concept of wasting energy on something without a positive outcome bothered her. She had started dusting the many pieces of pottery which had made their way downstairs during the previous week, when another uncomfortable thought emerged. What she was doing didn't make any sense. It wasn't just the pottery, which she'd already catalogued as a thing to pass the time in the absence of anything better to do, but the rest of her activities as well. Something about her approach to life was fundamentally flawed, in a way she could feel deeply in her heart but found very difficult to put into words. Her thought process must have sent a bat signal to Mobius, who decided to show up. It's not something you can explain, Jennifer, Mobius offered counsel. Not in the context of what you would call normal, anyway. You have to care about things to have them stick around. Love them or hate them, they can't tell the difference. Everything else goes away. Why? Jennifer asked. Why do I have to care about the chair I'm sitting in? You really don't have to, Mobius agreed. How long have you had that chair? A couple of years, Jennifer replied. What did you do for sitting down before that? I had another chair. What happened to it? It broke. And before that? Another chair. What happened to it? I didn't like it. I put it out to the curb. I'm not going to continue this list. You get the idea. If all you need is a chair to sit in, you'll get a chair. It's not going to be a specific chair, but it will accomplish the task. Learn to differentiate between the concept of chair and the individual item. Human life usually works in concept, on almost every level. The home you live in, the job you have, your relationships, even love. Everything people start out with is contractor grade, so to speak. You have to put a piece of your soul into them to make them special. That's what we call creativity, or spirit, the spirit of things, places, connections. I know the chair is a poor example, but let's use it anyway. As long as you don't care enough about a particular design, you're going to get a generic model, which will be replaced regularly with other generic models, equally indifferent in emotional value. I'm not going to waste emotional energy on caring about a chair, Jennifer blurted outraged. Let's talk about your jobs. How many did you have? A few, Jennifer's mood worsened. How about friends? Mobius didn't relent. Sure, you're very young, but do you have any friendships that you held on to for many years? A few, Jennifer replied. What about your other acquaintances? You get to meet new people all the time, it's normal. Jennifer became defensive. That's exactly what I'm trying to point out to you. That's how the world works. How many apartments have you lived in so far? This is ridiculous. Who cares about apartments? They're all the same. Jennifer tried to end the conversation, not realizing she was demonstrating Mobius's argument for him. "What do you want, Jennifer?" Mobius stared at her intently. "What do you really want?"
"I want to be special. Remember? I want to do extraordinary things."
Jennifer started sniffling softly when she encountered Mobius' grisly stare and stopped immediately.
"I want to dangle upside down from the ceiling just to defy gravity. Actually, I take it back, the gravity plate was cool," Mobius smiled.
"Feel free to hang upside down from the ceiling all you want. You'll have to forgive me for being overprotective sometimes, it comes with the job."
"Overprotective? You forgot me in quantum uncertainty for 3 weeks.
Not of you," he continued smiling. "Of the universe, I have to make sure you're not going to mess it up. Now back to our lesson. Think of anything, object, thought, person, feeling. How about this jug?" She pointed to the first object she laid her eyes on.
"Fine, if you can't waste effort on finding something you actually care about, we'll improve on the indifferent," he frowned, displeased.
"What did you have in mind when you created this jug?"
"Nothing, I suppose. You are always thinking of something, you just can't remember it because your mind has an irrelevance overload protocol in place. If the thought does not impact your existence in any meaningful way, it goes into the recycling bin. The problem is it still leaves a groove on your brain, one of which you are generally unaware."
"Try to think," he encouraged her.
"I can't remember," Jennifer threw in the towel.
"I can tell just by looking at it. It is exactly like the one next to it and quite a few others over there on the shelf."
"They are nothing alike," she protested, surprised, and then relented when upon a closer inspection she determined that the objects in question were similar indeed.
"Well, maybe a little. What does that mean?"
"What that means is that not only you are unaware of the mental abstractions that generated all of these objects, but they all revolved around one singular concept, and not an interesting one at that," he concluded, looking at the uninspiring design.
"Maybe I'm not capable of designing something interesting," Jennifer became defensive again.
"There are several things wrong with this sentence. The first one is that you requested a design change that would make you special, which I provided, and I'm very good at what I do."
And very modest to boot, Jennifer's mind churned in silence.
"The second thing," Mobius ignored her unspoken repartee, "is that you already made interesting. Very interesting, actually. Some of it a little ill-advised, but interesting nonetheless. Why can't you do the same with a jug?"
"I don't care about the jug."
Jennifer raised her voice in exasperation.
"Why are you making things you don't care about?"
Mobius matched her frustration and raised her another 100.
"The world is full of stuff people don't care about. Heaven is full of concepts angels don't care about."
"I heard that."
A Fail's voice boomed in his ear.
"What I'm trying to say," Mobius continued, a little more subdued, "is that machines have been invented to make a million little objects all the same. The human mind is free to create unique things now."
"What's the third thing?"
Jennifer kept the count.
"The third thing is that the first jug you made, the one that went to the antiquity, was quite good. You must have cared about that one."
"I care about all the stuff I make until you come and tear it to shreds."
Mobius shuffled, uncomfortable. It dawned on him that being a guardian angel was not entirely the mindless job he always thought it was, and that maybe he didn't have the patience and empathy required to do it properly. He decided to take another approach.
"What were you thinking when I found you hanging upside down from the keystone?"
"I was thinking how awesome that was and that I was happy," Jennifer responded in a tone which made obvious that whatever happiness that past event embodied had long dissipated.
"I was thinking," she started tentatively, "isn't that something you can change in the code? You know, so I'd be happy all the time?
I design skills, events, life blueprints, I don't do feelings."
He protested.
"Why can't you handle your own emotions? I thought you said you wanted free will. Will yourself happy?"
"That's absurd. You need a reason to be happy," she protested.
"And you can't create it unless you already are happy. See the vicious cycle here?"
Mobius got progressively annoyed.
"What are you willing to invest mental energy in, Jennifer, other than getting upset over not being me?"
Jennifer decided not to gratify this rhetorical question with an answer. She was sitting in a high chair across the table from him, in her own kitchen, whatever that meant, and was swinging her legs like a petulant pupil who got caught cutting class and was sent to the principal's office.
"Why do I even care what he thinks?"
she brooded. Technically, she was dead. All her debt to society had been paid. It was supposed to be all about her, all the time now, filled with joy, love, and bliss. Unless she was going to the basement, what if she'd earned herself a place there?
She tried to think of all the things she might have done prior to this bewildering experience that could have earned her a smoldering spot, while Mobius stared at her with his arms crossed and a deep crease between his eyebrows. "You are going to give me a headache with this nonsense. Would you please stop? If you want, I can take you on a tour of both the basement and the attic. I can assure you haven't missed much. Why can't you, for once, take it on faith that you've been given an extraordinary gift, even though making use of it requires a pittance of effort on your part?" Jennifer almost forgot the strictly enforced ban on sniveling and was about to start again. "But when do I get to be happy, Mobius? When?" she declaimed in a mournful tone worthy of Greek tragedy. "How about now? Be happy right now." He yawned, bored, and left. After Mobius left, Jennifer spent a few minutes picking up the apartment, which, she noticed, wasn't nearly as messy as it used to be. She couldn't remember cleaning it, so she had to assume that either her mother had stopped by in her absence, or the results of her nascent mental discipline had started to sift down into reality. Nevertheless, she found a plethora of odds and ends, complements of her half-finished projects upstairs, all belonging to the category of objects that one can't bring oneself to throw away, but that never serve any real purpose and end up cluttering the living space. There is a pervasive sense of futility associated with the awareness that an all-knowing being is guiding your life. If somebody or something already knows and most likely designed all the aspects of your life, if every hair on your head is numbered, why would you bother to pretend you have free will at all? "Would you feel better about yourself if I offered no guidance?" Mobius replied. "How is he here again to comment on my every thought?" Jennifer asked herself, exasperated, since he just left, after regaling her with a good helping of constructive criticism no less. "Every time you think about me, I get the equivalent of a 911 call. I am your guardian angel, Jennifer, and sadly, this is my one and only job, listening to you." Self-determination, was it? Maybe there is justice in the universe after all. Jennifer couldn't help herself. "Please, go on. What do you want to know?
Is there any?"
Mobius paused for a second, not sure how to approach the subject. "So, do you remember the conversations we had in the beginning, about the life script and such?" Jennifer nodded. "And how your code is different now?" Jennifer nodded again. "You shouldn't take that to mean that whatever comes out of it is completely random. The laws of causality still apply, time still moves only forward, and everything that happens must be written in the code in order for it to happen. Now, somebody has to write it, and that's either you or me." "What if I write something that doesn't make any sense?" Jennifer asked. "How would you be able to tell?" Mobius was about to say, but refrained. The angelic hosts had been perplexed for eons by the patently absurd choices the few lucky humans with a sandbox usually made. There was no analysis behind their decisions, no forethought, nothing that made any sense to a rational being. Well, no matter how incoherent the code is, there will still be a logical unfolding of consequences. Nothing comes as a surprise. Every creative endeavor, and life is eminently a creative endeavor, is the outcome of universal laws and conscious intent. But what about luck, or unforeseen circumstances? Written, what if I suddenly decide to move to Zanzibar permanently? Now that would be one of those random lines of code you write for yourself that generate weird results, but which under normal circumstances would have been part of your original code. Just because it seems like a sudden decision for you, it doesn't mean it would take me by surprise. So, hypothetically speaking, you would know all the developments that could unfold from my moving to Zanzibar? I already do know all of the developments that would unfold from your moving to Zanzibar, or any other modifications you might want to make to the code. So, you are saying that no matter what I decide to do, you already know it. In a nutshell, this is so devastatingly depressing I don't have words for it. What about love, Mobius? Written, why on earth would the angels bother with that? Well, your kind is mortal, so it becomes sort of a necessity. Mobius looked down, slightly embarrassed. Sorry to ruin romance for you. I can write that portion of the code if it makes you uncomfortable. Come to think of it, now that your life is non-expiring, that is no longer a necessity for you. Thank you, Mobius. Thank you for ruining Santa for me. You are too old to believe in Santa, anyway. Enjoy that privilege.
I'm 29.
Jennifer protested. Not anymore, you're not. Not in this context. Jennifer spent some time in sullen silence, during which she scrubbed the kitchen counter until she could see her reflection in it. I think it's clean enough, Jennifer, Mobius spoke softly. What is the point of doing anything at all? What gives you a reason to exist if you already know everything that was, is and ever will be. She looked at him, distraught.
You are looking at this from a limited perspective. Human life is like a train that only moves along its rail and only moves in one direction. That doesn't mean that that rail is the whole of existence and the direction is set in stone. I can move in any direction I please, and I can see the whole field, and I don't understand why you would find that depressing.
Did you get a chance to access your libraries?
What libraries?
Jennifer jumped, alarmed.
The Akashic libraries, you're tied into several of them. It may be useful for you to watch your possible life paths. It's good mental exercise and it would help you make better decisions.
You don't understand humans at all, do you?
Jennifer blurted, shocked.
Sorry, no.
I have to confess, your choices never seem to make any sense to me.
Great, now I have to worry that I'm going to accidentally open a library file and see my whole life flash before my eyes.
What's the point of sitting through a movie you've already seen?
You mean you've never watched a movie more than once?
Mobius asked innocently.